Well, it's been less than 3 weeks since we began our Preparing for Chaos series, and it's already become very real for Gun for Hire radio listeners in Southern California, all 102,724 of you as of last week. I'm not going to use the phrase thoughts and prayers because I'm afraid it would sound trite and meaningless, but, well, you know. Our hope in this series is to jar you out of your state of normalcy bias, to wake you to reality. Not panic, mind you, but reality. The attack of innocence in San Bernardino by radical Islamic terrorists, I'm calling it that, even though the administration still begrudgingly refuses to, should make it very clear to you that you are going to have to protect your family when this comes to your neighborhood. And whether you live in a city or in a very small town, it doesn't matter. It's coming. Again, I say this not to panic you, but to jar you into reality. Domestic instability, Islamic instability, international instability, and economic instability are clear and present dangers, which is why you and your family need to be prepared. And chances are you're not, or at least not as prepared as you could be. The good news is, because you listen to this show, you're probably more prepared than your friends or family or neighbors. But our goal in this series is to make you even more prepared, to make you strong so that you can be of assistance to others. This week, we're going to introduce you to a new skill for many of you that could keep you and your family alive and help you to protect your home and property when the shelves of ammunition are absolutely bare. Because as you've already seen, well, Islamic terrorists are exterminating our fellow citizens, the administration still refuses to acknowledge that they exist. And you've seen their real agenda, not to fight terrorism, but to disarm American citizens and keep us from defending ourselves. Well, part of the administration's plan to render us defenseless is a disruption in the civilian ammunition supply line. That's why reloading is a critical skill for every gun owner, and why you should be considering learning how to do it yourself. And that's why we chose this topic for this week's show. Now, we're not going to be diving deeply into the subject. We just got together a few friends to discuss it as sort of a primer, in hopes that it'll whet your appetite to learn even more. And at the end of the show, I promise to give you an opportunity to do just that. Look, it's important that we all learn as much as we can and get our friends and family and neighbors to learn as much as they can. And a good way to get them up to speed is to get them to listen to this series on the show. And when you do, ask them to subscribe through iTunes using the iTunes app, because that helps boost ratings of the show on iTunes and exposes the show to some people who might never even consider bumping into this kind of content. Bottom line, the more friends and family and neighbors we can wake up, the better off we'll all be. The third installment of our series on preparing for chaos, Reloading. Gun for Hire Radio episode 236, coming up.
Broadcasting from behind the Second Amendment Iron Curtain in the shadows of the New York City skyline, this is Gun for Hire Radio, the voice of 1 million New Jersey gun owners, with your hosts, Sandy Berardi and Master Firearms Trainer, Anthony Calandra.
The weekly gathering place for over 1 million freedom-loving gun owners, the most listened to Second Amendment broadcast in the nation. Welcome to it. Well, this week is something a little different, an entire show on reloading. With me this week in the studio, a walking encyclopedia on firearms, especially 1911s, and reloading, Sergeant Charlie Padula, and a guest who just dropped by to say hello that we stuck on the radio, the guy who taught me to shoot my first gun, my cousin Bob. Between the two of you, almost a century of reloading experience together. Charlie, when did you first start reloading?
Reloading actually started in the 60s. My father had a gun shop in the 60s. And we used to reload for the police department. We had a Star Progressive Press in the basement of his gun shop in Belleville. The police department came to my father. They needed rounds to practice. So he would cast the lead bullets, and it was my job at that time to size the bullets. And he would pay me by coffee can. It was like a dime a coffee can to resize the bullets. It was sizing and lubing at the time. And who knew back then that lead would do you any harm or not, but the twitch has gone away, but I'm doing better now.
Well, we're here in the studio. My cousin stopped in, and my cousin Bob, say hello, Bob.
Hello.
He's the guy who's responsible for me. He's the gun guy in my life. I mean, for the first time we ever went out, I was 12 years old.
He's the one that corrupted you then?
He corrupted me. He ruined my life from a very early age on. And Bob, how long have you been reloading, though?
Probably since around 76, 77. So we're talking...
a couple of years.
Yeah.
Why do you guys reload?
Relaxation.
I got started. Used to be able to buy 30-06s for $5 a box, and they went up to like $7 a box. And I says, I'm not paying that. I'm going to start reloading. And then I started out with the basics, and that's... It progresses. It snowballs, let's put it that way.
Wow. How much do you think you've saved over the years in reloading?
How much have I actually saved, or how much have I told my wife I had saved?
Yeah, that's two different things, right?
Because there's the new equipment that's come out, and I always pick up a piece here or a piece there, but save thousands, though, honestly. Yeah. Save thousands of dollars for the amount that I shoot. I try to shoot every day. If I go out into the range and pull the trigger for 10 rounds, I try to pull the trigger every day.
Which is important. Yeah, like we talk about with training, too. It's very, very important that whatever you do, you should do it every single day. Even if it's just a small amount, you just do it every single day. And, Bob, what about you? What do you think? You started out to save money.
Yes, that's how I started. And then the more you read and the more you... investigate this, the more involved you get. The majority of my stuff is 223, 308, and 3006 for the AR, the M1A, the AR-10, and the M1 Garands. Also 3006 for my hunting rifles and 7mm Remington mag. But being able to tailor a round for a particular rifle or firearm, because they're all very finicky. They all have a mind of their own, what they want to do, and each one, sometimes you can get away by loading across the board, but if you have one firearm in particular, you can really tailor around just for that.
Is that sort of what you do too, Charlie? Or you're just... You're doing it for relaxation, which is what I do. I kind of like, for me, I just load shotgun now, so I'm like I'm an infancy state to this stuff, and I have my recipe, and I do it because I want to shoot. I want to be able to tailor my round to shoot 7/8 ounce in a 12 gauge, yet I want a little faster round. So for me, once I got that formula down, once I got that little recipe down, I kind of stick to it. So it's kind of it's almost brainless for me now. So I get to just sit there and pull the handle and just relax. You know, maybe I'll listen to a podcast or something like that and just sit and relax. It's a good relaxation time. And the times when I can't really make it out to, shoot trap, if it's the weather's kind of inclement, I'm not a hardcore guy. If it's raining, if it's snowing, if it's cold, I'm not out there. I just want to enjoy myself.
Right.
But I'll sit and pull the handle.
Absolutely, and the satisfaction of knowing that you took that game with a round that you loaded yourself is great.
It's kind of full circle, right? I mean, for me, what about you guys? I mean, for me, the first time I ever shot a round that I loaded myself, it was kind of like a weird sense of satisfaction.
It worked.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, first it was, it worked. I didn't blow up the gun. It was pretty good. But it was kind of weird because it was a full circle now, because it was a new round. I shot it. you break the target or you make a kill, right? And then it comes full circle. You've reloaded that thing now, and now you're shooting it again. It just completed a cycle, and I just got really excited about it.
That and for the accuracy, the absolute accuracy of the round itself. I bought a barrel for the Contender. I shoot the Thompson Contender, G2 Contender rifle, single-shot rifle, for deer. I picked a barrel up in .338 Federal. I picked up two boxes of factory ammo because I couldn't get any empty brass. I fired them. It shot like buckshot. 100 yards, 6-7-inch groups. It was, I tailored a load for it, and I got, you know, within 1 inch at 100 yards is phenomenal accuracy.
Yeah. You find the same thing, Bob? Is that why you're doing now?
Or? Yes. You know, I do shoot in competition, not as much as I did. And you can get that round. You can take one caliber or one particular rifle, and you got to find the right bullet weight, the right bullet manufacturer, and then the right powder. And there's all these different burning rates and all these different designs of bullets. They may say match, but if you look at them, their ogives and whatnot, and their length, it becomes very critical. You know, bullet jump, there's so many things you can play with. You know, with a bolt-action rifle, you have more leeway, you know, as far as bullet length as compared to something that's magazine-fed or an automatic where you have to full-size your cases. Bolt-action, you can neck size, and it's going to be a more accurate round.
All right. Well, I understood about every third word of that. So when we come back for the new guys, talk us through what it's like, what you need, how you start out at this at reloading, if you're interested in reloading, what to look for, what kind of equipment you need, and what to stay away from. For over 20 years, attorney Evan Knappen has seen what rotten laws do to good people. That's why he's dedicated his life to fighting for the rights of New Jersey gun owners. A fearsome courtroom litigator, one of the first lawyers to ever get a federal injunction against the state gun law. An unrelenting gun rights spokesman, tearing away at the anti-gun propaganda to expose the truth. Author of 5 best-selling books on gun rights, including Knappen on New Jersey Gun Law. The bright orange gun law Bible that sits atop the desk of virtually every lawyer, police chief, firearms dealer, and savvy gun owner in New Jersey. That's what's made Evan Knappen New Jersey's gun lawyer. New Jersey gun laws are designed to make you a criminal. Don't become the victim of New Jersey's vicious anti-gun legal system. This is the guy you want on your side. Keep his name and phone number on a post-it note attached to your New Jersey firearms ID card in your wallet, and hope you'll never have to use it. But if you live, work, or travel through New Jersey with a firearm, the deck is already stacked against you. Keep his number with you always. You can find him on the web at evannappen.com, or take the link from the Gun for Hire radio resource page. Evan Knappen, New Jersey's gun lawyer.
The world's becoming a dangerous place for us women. Lipstick Bodyguard looks just like an innocent little lipstick, but it'll instantly drop any attacker to his knees so you can get away unharmed.
And what better way to say I love you than giving the ones you love a gift to keep them safe? Lipstick Bodyguard. It looks just like a beautiful little lipstick, but just like a beautiful woman, it has the power to bring a grown man to his knees.
Lipstick Bodyguard. Fear no evil. Get yours today, only at lipstickbodyguard.com.
And this segment's being brought to you by Montville Office Suites, montvilleoffice.com. It's time to get out of your mother's basement, out of the Starbucks. And if you're sizing down, it's the perfect opportunity to move into one of the 38 beautifully furnished private office suites at Montville Office. Ron Seuss has been sponsoring this program since day one. Great two-way supporter. We always say support those who support us. But aside from that, from a purely business standpoint, this is the place. It's absolutely gorgeous. And if you don't need a full-time office, this is the place to go for that one day a week meeting. You can rent a conference room. You can rent an office for the day. You need somebody to answer your telephones and get your mail? They do that too. They've got meeting rooms with the ability to host seminars and events that'll hold up to 70 people. If you've got a business located anywhere in the northern New Jersey, New York metro area, and you're looking for an officing option that'll give a great first impression at a really budget-friendly price, find out more at MontvilleOffice.com. All right, before we left, we were talking about newbies, and we were talking off the air about, you know, you just got back from the range, Bob?
Yes.
And what was going on up there?
It was windy.
Yeah. Yeah, it is very windy today, Ezra.
Yeah, I shot 200s with my M1A, which I load. I got this triple G brass. You know, components are very important. You must, once you start reloading, all your brass must be the same manufacturer. If you start really getting serious about this, you know, you weigh them, and you get the weight's very consistent.
You weigh the brass, individual brass?
For rifle rounds, absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's really technical at this point now. Do you guys pick up brass that's at the range, or do you buy the brass new?
Well, today I just happened to find a struck gold. I probably found 100 rounds of .308 Winchester manufactured by Remington that somebody had discarded.
You can always tell a reloader at the range, right? We're scrounging in the garbage
can. Right? Yeah. Yeah. It's not only the bears that are in the garbage can.
You watch the other shooters, you see what they're shooting and what they do with the brass afterwards. Yeah.
And you go, right, exactly.
Yeah. Dumpster diving.
That's sad, but it's kind of cool, right?
It is. I mean, it's not that I need it, but I have it.
Yeah, exactly, right. You probably, like...
It's another cost.
It's another cost.
It's another cost.
Yeah.
Now, you got 100 rounds of brass there. That's five boxes of ammo, five 20-round boxes of ammo that you would have paid, you know, $20 a piece for, just for the brass.
Wow. $20 a piece per box, right?
Possibly, yes.
Yeah.
Depending upon the manufacturer of brass.
Wow. So that's a big savings, too.
Sure.
So, all right. So talk me through this in the beginning. What do you need?
The biggest thing, I think, handgun caliber versus rifle caliber. Handgun caliber, guys, start saving your brass. Start saving the brass now, because right now you go to the range, you shoot a couple rounds. Granted, you're chasing your rounds all over the range. You know, your empty brass all over the range, but start saving your brass. That's one of your biggest costs.
So I'm shooting a handgun, a 9mm handgun. Does it matter now? Does manufacturer matter at this point for handgun loads?
I like to stick with the same manufacturer.
You're still done. Okay. All right. So that means then if I'm shooting, say, Remington brass, I'm chasing my brass then.
Yep.
And if I do pick up anybody else's brass, am I keeping it separate?
If I pick it up, I'll put it in my scrap barrel.
Okay.
But I try not to steal from the range. That would, you know, that'd be not proper to take it. It's
okay.
Not mine.
But if it was a range, you know, a lot of places too, a lot of people don't police their brass. I'm not talking about a range like Gun for Hire range, but suppose it was just out in the, you know, normal, like even in the state range too. Mm-hmm. The state range, maybe nobody polices their brass, or they dump it into the can.
Right.
You know, there's the 55-gallon drums up there with that are sealed, and there's a dustpan and a broom that, you know, police it up and dump it in there. But there's always stuff laying around.
Yeah, that people are slobs, and they're just not going to.
Right.
Now, so it does matter, you know, handgun caliber does matter.
Well, handgun caliber, I'm a little crazy that I like to keep the same manufacturer brass. This way I know this is mine, this is all the same.
Okay.
Less variables. You want less variables when you reload.
Okay.
Especially my rifle rounds. My rifle rounds are the same lot, and I keep that same lot, and I keep the same rounds together, and I use the plastic boxes to keep them separated. This way I have a round count, and I know how many rounds that I fire through them and how many times I reload them, and I'll only reload them for so many times depending upon the pressures of the load.
Okay, so that all depends, too. I know for shotgun stuff, you know, with the hauls, basically, you know, you kind of, I've gotten cheap on some of them, and you know, I'll load them even though they're starting to crack a little bit up toward the crimping area, but you know when they're not reloadable anymore from a shotgun standpoint. How do you guys know from a rifle standpoint or handgun standpoint?
Well, at times the necks will split. There'll be times I've had bad experience with the Federal Brass in 223 after like three reloadings, the primer pocket for some reason enlarge and they will not hold the primer. So that's right to the scrap barrel.
So what you're trying to put a primer in and it drops and out?
Yeah, you can feel it
fall right out.
Wow.
It'll go in too easy, it'll go in. Too easy.
Okay, all right.
That, and you could see on the base of the case, just up from the base of the case, you'll start to see a bright ring where the case elongates. Because the case actually stretches each time you shoot it. So the case, as it stretches lengthwise, it'll start to thin out. So as it thins out, it'll become brighter in a specific area down around the base. So that's the case stretching lengthwise. So it's just a matter of time before that case fails and it just comes apart and the base comes off.
Wow.
It's all head separation.
Head separation.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Now, so when you every time you fire that, now, do you have to cut a piece off of the top? Is that, or is it?
Well, when you resize, after you have like 10,000s tolerance to play with, and once it exceeds that maximum, you trim it back 10,000s. And then depending on what your loads are, or again, I try not to work my brass as much as possible. I try to resize it. When I resize it, and I'm full-length size, and I just try to push the shoulder back a little bit so it will chamber.
Because you're working on tight tolerances with a bolt action.
Well, what we're talking about is when you resize, at full-length resizing, you're squeezing it down to an acceptable size.
Because the brass has already stretched because of the pressures involved.
And then when you fire it again, it's going to grow that much more. So if you try not to work it, you try to work at the minimum, resize it, push the shoulder back the minimum amount.
And how do you control that?
There's gauges that you have, and you adjust your sizing dies.
Wow, so this is something that you really need to learn. How did you guys learn this? Did you do this on your own? Did you take...
Sometimes it's trial and error.
Okay, yeah.
I learned from my father. Yeah. My father taught me from at your a dad. Young age. Yep.
Okay, and how did you learn, Bob? Did you...
I bought a... I guess it was the spear reloading manual.
Okay.
I think it was number 9 at the time. And
it's a good book.
You know, and I read that one, and I probably read it a couple times, and then I just started going from there.
A lot of those things can be confusing too, because I know when I got a reloading manual myself, and I sat down, it just was so overwhelming. And then couple that with all the misinformation that's out there, and man. It can be truly overwhelming for a newbie. So let's talk about some of that misinformation and what to do about it when we come back.
For many people, walking into a range the first time, it's quite intimidating. So when you walk in through the double doors, the first thing you'll see on your left is a concierge. When people walk in, they can take a tour of the range, or maybe they're coming in for an appointment with one of my instructors or me, and they'll be directed to the right classroom. It kind of softens the entire experience. It makes people feel more at home. As you walk further into the range, you're going to notice we have New Jersey's only indoor 50-yard range, which is heated and air-conditioned. The dividers in each port are bulletproof. They're extra-wide ports, so two people can stand side-by-side and shoot. There's lights in the ports, so you're well-lit. We also have 3 times as much light downrange that the average range would have, because I believe it's important that the targets are well-lit. Our target retrieval system is all digital. You program how many feet you want to send it out, and it stays there. Both of our ranges are tactically baffled, which means when we run our higher level courses, you can move forward to the firing line and shoot in any direction, and bullets can't escape. When you come out of the 50-yard range, to your left, you'll see our large classroom. And go back up to the concierge and make a right, we have two smaller classrooms. And those classrooms are for small one-on-one classes, our Build-A-Bear, building an AR. As you enter through there, you'll see that we have a portal with a key to go into our Platinum Lounge. They can sit around and watch TV on the leather chairs or couches, and they can maybe work deals with their clients. And you normally don't see a cafe in an indoor range. New Jersey, we have this archaic law where you're only supposed to go from your house to the range to the house with no unnecessary deviations. I'm seeing a lot more families coming in now where they have multiple kids and the wife will stay in the cafe with one or two kids and they'll do a handoff. To me, it's very important that people are treated like family. So the bathrooms are very high end. We used marble and corian and really nice tile and full length dividers so that people are comfortable when they come in. When you exit the bathroom, you'll see the Gun for Hire radio studio where Sandy and I tape our show. After you pass that and you make a left, you'll notice our retail area. Over 120 firearms for rent. As you turn 180 degrees, you see the large sections of bulletproof glass. That's our 25-yard range. And inside our 25-yard range, we have 13 ports. Those ports are even wider than the 50-yard range. Both ranges have full-time range safety officers. In case you have any questions or concerns, they're there to help you.
Freedom.
No rules, no apologies, no holding back. Gun for Hire Radio, the most listened to Second Amendment broadcast in the nation. 4 years running.
And this segment's being brought to you by Waldorf Chiropractic, waldorfchiro.com. Dr. Eric is a shooter himself, so he knows about the body mechanics of shooting. So if you're a shooter and you're having problems with your shoulder, your stance, your alignment, or repetitive injuries from, like in my case, trap shooting competition, he is the guy who can tune your body up and show you how to eliminate some of the problems that can result from contorting your body into positions it's not naturally accustomed to while you're shooting. And not only that, but because he knows body mechanics and he knows shooting, he can show you how to sometimes improve your stance like he did for me, which helped me to pick up two targets in my game just by adjusting the center of gravity in my stance, which is why Dr. Eric is my personal chiropractor, and he should be yours too. You can find out more at waldorfchiro.com, waldorfchiro.com. And we're back with our reloading special. And I want to thank you guys for coming in and doing this, too. I mean, this is, I'm very interested, and I know our...
It's something we enjoy.
Yeah.
Bobby mentioned the spear manual. One of the manuals that I like, a personal favorite, is the Lyman reloading manual.
That's the one I have. I have a Lyman.
The Lyman one. They're up to like their 49th edition now, and a lot of good information in the front of that.
Now, see, the Lyman book that I bought was just for shotgun. It wasn't because I don't, you know, I'm not a long range shooter yet. I just do, you know, mostly clays and that sort of thing. And I started really reloading based on a lot of what everybody else who were reloading were saying about the relaxation part, just to, you know, to be able to just sit back, kick back, listen to a radio, listen, in my case, I listen to a podcast. And it just, I find it very kind of comforting in a way. Just, it's just quiet work. It's just, it's, and it's precise, and it kind of sets your brain in a different area too. But the control you have at that point, and the fact that you can, you know, no matter what happens, as long as you've got enough components, you'll always have ammunition, because a gun without ammo is like a very expensive
stick.
Paperweight. Yeah, stick.
All right, so... It means we can't have bayonet lugs.
Yeah, we can't. Yeah, no, and this is Jersey, so we can't have bayonet lugs, so the bayonets are out. But Knappen can have a bayonet lug on his shotgun, which still boggles my mind that he does. you know, but all right, so beginner, what is a beginner... where do you start? Where would you guys start if you were to, if a person was interested in reloading, where would you start? Would you start with handgun? Would you start with shotgun? Would you start with rifle?
I'd say probably the easiest one to get started on. It would be a straight-walled handgun cartridge.
Okay. Explain that straight-walled handgun.
Straight-walled would be a 9mm, 38, 357, something without a shoulder to it.
Okay.
Not like a 357 SIG or not a rifle cartridge. But
and it, by a shoulder, you're talking about the thing that indents at the top.
The bottleneck.
Bottleneck. Yes. So the bottleneck-looking shells, no. You would start with something that, you're saying straight-walled cartridge, something that is just plain old straight-walled.
Absolutely.
Yes. Okay. And why would you do that?
The easiest to reload.
Okay.
Reloading, the basis of reloading is all the same no matter what caliber you're doing. But it becomes more difficult when you add more variables. And a variable would be the taper of the shoulder to the mouth of the bullet.
Why so now?
Lubrication purposes. You have to make sure you lubricate it more. You have to make sure you don't push that shoulder back. More variables come into play.
Okay.
And reloading, whereas a straight wall, it's just a straight die, straight wall. Resize is very easy.
And if you use carbide, it's even easier.
Absolutely. I'd say use carbide for everything.
You lost me there.
Okay. They make a carbide sizing die, and then there's no lubrication required, but it's recommended that you clean your brass first because you don't want a piece of grit on the brass when you run it through that carbide.
That's interesting. All right, so now you're taking the brass, and how do you clean it? When you run it through a dishwasher? Or?
No. The old brother, the old board, you know,
scrub board. Yeah,
yeah. It's either a tumbler or a vibrating. I have a thumbless tumbler, and I also have a vibrating type of cleaner. With I use a
and what do you what goes either, in? Is that the like the nutshells or
corn cob, crushed corn cob, or crushed walnut hulls with like a jeweler's type rouge on it?
Oh, okay.
And it cleans them. They have it with the rouge and without the rouge. I put it through the tumbler without the rouge first to clean any dirt and grit off it.
Okay.
Run it through a separator from there, and then run it through the one with the rouge, and it polishes it all.
And the separator, what is that?
It's just
a sifter,
like a colander.
Oh, okay.
A spaghetti colander.
Oh, okay. So all the junk then falls out, and all you're left with is. Now, how does the inside? I know this is a stupid question, but how does the inside? Are you worried about the inside of this cartridge too, or is it just the outside?
Oh, absolutely, inside and outside. And what I'll do is I'll deprime the brass also before I run it through there, so it helps to clean the primer pockets out when you run it through the tumbler.
And now the neck of the brass or the inside of the brass, how does that get cleaned? Are these particulates small enough to be able to get into there? Oh, they are.
Yes.
And then if you really want to get the exotic, they make stainless steel pins that you actually do this with liquid.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's just that the stainless steel, it's hard getting them all out and
It's emptying them out of the cartridges once you're done.
Oh, once you're done.
Yep.
And you really have to. So this is not something that, you know, if you don't have any attention to detail, you're not going to be doing.
You have to have patience.
No. Yeah.
No. It's not a hit and run.
I'll take my tumbler and put it on one of the light timers.
Right.
And set it for an hour or 2 hours, however long I want it to run for.
Okay.
And set it out in the barn and let it run for an hour or two. When I'm done at the end of the day, and then I'll come back the next day and I can sift all it out and separate the media from the cartridges.
Okay. And the media can be used again or no?
Yeah, probably 4 or 5 times.
And then it picks up dirt. Depends on how dirty it is.
Dirt or rocks. When I got brass from the range and it's gravel, you'll have gravel in there. You'll have bits of grass in there. You'll have all kinds of foreign objects in there.
Okay. Wow. Yeah, see, with a shotgun, it pretty much... Well, because you're controlling it, right? With rifle, whether it's, I guess, a bolt action, you're still ejecting that bolt and it's still hitting the ground.
Right.
Where shotgun, especially a double barrel shotgun, if you're using an automatic shotgun, different thing. But, you know, you crack the gun open, it ejects, pop it in your hand, you toss it into your bag.
Right.
So it stays clean. It's controlled, yeah. Now, how about shotgun reloading versus rifle reloading? Shotgun, I'm really assuming here, but based on my experience, is a whole lot easier than loading for rifle, because in a I use a mech reloader.
Right.
And I've got the little mech junior that Bob picked up for me at one of the swap matches. And the thing is great because for me, a lot of guys in the beginning were talking about progressive machines. You know, you got to get a progressive machine. That's the only way to go because every time you pull the handle, you make a shell. But I found a bit of comfort in the fact that if I screw up, I'm only screwing up one shell, where with a progressive machine, you have an opportunity to screw up a whole bunch. A
lot more going on.
Yeah, a lot more going on.
For all my rifle cartridges that I'm going to use for hunting or for competition purposes, I load everything on a single stage press. One stage is done at one time. This way I know exactly what's going on. I'll do it for the priming stage, from the priming stage to the powder stage, from the powder stage to the bullet seeding stage, and I'll do 50 cartridges at once where I'll prime all 50 at once.
Okay.
And then I'll come back and do my next stage. I do one stage at a time. I like to be more control. It gives me more control and more exactness. I don't even know if that's a word, but
it is now.
Yeah. more exactness, so I know exactly that if something is wrong with that round, I did something wrong. Not that the machine did something wrong because it's flying through a progressive machine and five things are going on at once.
And you're not watching each and every stage. You can only watch one stage at a time.
Absolutely.
Okay. I find the same thing with with the shotgun too, because there are times when sometimes it's hard to, now with rifle and brass, is it hard to deprime sometimes? Do you find some shells, some cartridges different?
Just the military. Military brass is crimped.
So the primer is crimped in place.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
They don't want the primer inadvertently coming out when the gun's being fired because it would jam up the gun. So they have a way of rolling over the edge of the brass to hold the primer in place. So now to remove that primer, which has been pinched theoretically in place, is a lot more difficult.
How do you do that? Is there another step you have to do for that?
Yes, they make a tool, an anvil with a punch, and I physically do it with a small ball peen hammer.
Oh, wow.
It's to remove the primer.
To remove the primer.
And then you have to, Bobby, how do you remove your crimps?
Well, I got a deburrer. And then sometimes I have to swag them.
Yep.
And then I have a Sinclair Primer Pocket Reamer that I do.
That's just exactly what I do. I deprime them by hand where it looks like a nail and a base where you would sit the cartridge on this cylindrical base. Mm-hmm. Has a hole in the center. And you would take this device, which looks like a nail, but has a depriming pin in it. And you would drive out the primer with the ball peen hammer, and then from there you would have to remove the crimp which is in the cartridge, and I use a primer crimp remover tool. It's like a reamer type tool where you would go in and physically ream each primer pocket by hand.
How do you do? You're doing it by hand. You're twisting this by hand.
Yep, holding the piece of brass in my left hand and holding the reamer in my right hand, and you're reaming the brass. You're taking shards of brass or pieces of brass off now, by.
Are you eyeballing this, or is there some sort of gauge that
you can more or less feel it once you get used to doing? You can feel the crimp come off. So I have a tool made by Sinclair that you can take that reamer, like the case neck reamer or the it fits in there, and it's got a little crank, and you just crank them a little bit and takes them out. And I use that same thing for the Primer Pocket Remus.
Cool. Be back.
Everything I do gonna be funky from now on.
Time and memories. The two most precious things you can give someone. No cell phones, no video games, no electronic devices. No interruptions. Just your favorite gun, a couple boxes of ammo, and time spent together. The folks at Gun for Hire Woodland Park Range believe there's no time like the present, and no present like time. Step through their doors, and you'll feel time stand still. It may look like a luxury shooting range, but what they really sell is the perfect day. And perfect memories are made from perfect days. Gun for Hire Woodland Park Range, where family memories begin. And this segment's being brought to you by Philly Firearms Academy, phillyguntraining.com, our dear friend Jose Morales. Let me tell you, if you're anywhere in the South Jersey, greater Philadelphia area, Jose is the man, trained in tactical firearms by none other than the great one, Massad Ayoub, Anthony's mentor as well. Jose not only specializes in first-time shooters, especially female shooters, but he is the concealed carry expert for the city of Philadelphia. He'll help you get your paperwork done, get it processed properly, teach you about the laws of Philadelphia to help keep you out of jail, and then he'll be able to teach you to shoot straight, which is probably the most important part of concealed carry. He's located right at 975 Spring Garden in the Spring Garden section of Philadelphia, just a short walk from the very trendy and artsy Northern Liberties section and some great restaurants, by the way. He's right around the corner from the gun range and directly across the street from the Philadelphia Firearms Permitting section, so he knows them intimately. He's also a trained and certified instructor in Lipstick Bodyguard, and you can get Lipstick Bodyguard directly from Jose. And while you're at it, ask him for his recipe for mofongo, that classic Puerto Rican street food dish that I'm so very fond of. Actually, his is one of the best I've had, this side of San Juan. Okay, guys, so getting back, it sounds to me like there might be certain problems associated with using military brass that a first-timer might be aware of. I mean, is it really a good idea?
Well, it is good because the cost is less. You can usually get the military brass at less of a cost, but you're going to have to work up your load again because there's different thicknesses in the military brass than there is in the civilian brass. You might, if you're using a maximum charge in your cartridge of civilian brass, you might not be able to get that maximum charge within the case of the military brass.
Because of the thickness of the wall of the cartridge.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. It's the tolerance is that tight.
Yeah. I was shooting with a friend of mine that was in the service together, and you know, I'm watching his rounds go out, and I could see stuff going crazy, and I says, do you have all the same brass? Because I could see he's not the best one for polishing.
Oh, okay.
And you know, and I could see some shiny and some dull. He says, no. I said, Joe, you've got to be consistent.
So that's one of the – what are some of the mistakes you've seen other guys make? I mean, you know, for first-timers, you're saying now, just to kind of recap, pistol loads are probably the best thing, you know, to start with. And what about some common, I don't know, common errors, common misconceptions? You guys have been doing this long enough to hear some really weird things.
A lot of people try to make the bullet go faster than the one it should be. They think the faster is going to be the better, and that the powder charges that they use. You have to learn your signs, and you have to download to start with and work your way up in increments.
That and using different primers, switching primers between loads, using different lots of powder. You might have two containers of powder, both the same manufacturer number, Winchester 748. You might have a new can and an old can, but different lot numbers.
So you never mix those two lot numbers together?
I won't use that. I'll use the one lot until it's done, and then I'll start with another batch of brass, and I'll make sure that that load, I won't intermingle the powders within my selection of cartridges that I have to reload. If I have 50 cartridges and I only get 40 out of a can, I'm not going to load that remaining 10 with a new can of powder until I check that powder to make sure that it's going to fire exactly as the old powder did.
All right. Now, how do you check that?
Back to the range.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Load a couple rounds and go back to the range.
Now, do you both use chronographs in order to check your bullet speeds? Is that important at that point when you're saying, all right, I'm going back to the range now to check this? What are we checking when we go back to the range?
Accuracy. Velocity. Yeah.
Okay.
Make sure that the cartridges are staying at the same speed. They're all driving the same speed.
And you're doing that, and the only way to do that, obviously, is with a chronograph?
Chronograph is
yep.
Okay. So, but accuracy, bottom line, accuracy is what you're looking for.
Yes. That's the whole reason, the number one reason, that aside from the cost of savings, is I want my bullets to be most accurate. If they can, go through the same hole.
Okay. All right. So now suppose that new powder lot doesn't shoot. Do you have to adjust anything? I mean, not doesn't shoot, but doesn't shoot the same.
It's either increase or decrease.
Okay, depending upon. Now, how would you know whether to increase or decrease at that point?
I'd go back to the drawing board again.
Go right back to scratch.
Well, I would go back to my records first and see.
Okay.
I would work up my load in half grain increments up from minimum to maximum, looking for signs of pressure, looking for accuracy deviations. I would go back to see, when I first worked up that load, what my range was that I had loaded. I might load from 10 to 15 grains in half grain increments, 5 rounds at each increment, working my way up. Now, I would go back to say, okay, if I ended up saying that 14 grains was my maximum or my most accurate powder charge, I would go back and see where that accuracy started to tighten up. If it started to come into tight, if it started to become accurate at 12 and a half grains or 13 grains, I would start at 13 grains and work my way up slowly again to 14 grains to see if there's a variable in there. Maybe even going over 14 and a half or going to 14 and a half to see if it changed. Usually you don't get that much of a change, but I would break it down even further. If I knew that 14 was my load, I would go to 13.5, 13.6, 13.7, 13.8, 13.9, 13.9 grains in 5-round increments to see that I can tailor my load to the gun.
Okay.
By 1/10 of a grain increments. And play with it that way.
Would you go above that? Suppose 14 was your sweet spot, let's call it.
If it was, I would still stay within the
tolerances of the book.
Okay. You always go by your book. And don't just buy one reloading book. How many books you got in your library? I got about 25. Yeah. Every time there's a new one out, but I look for variables in a book. How many times you get misprints in books that are published?
Wow.
I'm not saying I've ever found it,
okay.
But I still go. This one manufacturer might say, okay, 15 grains is your maximum load. This one here says 15.5 is your maximum load. Now I'm checking another book to see, okay, where are these guys getting their information from? If 15 is my maximum load or 15.5 is my maximum load?
Now, on shotguns, I'm sure this works on rifles too. We talked about primers before too.
Yeah.
Changing primers changes pressure in a shotgun shell. Oh. I'm assuming that's the same in a
changes accuracy. Yes.
Changes everything. Yeah. Wow.
I mentioned on one of the previous shows about a good friend of mine, Vinny. We had the same barrels for our contenders,
right?
The same cartridges. He loaded his up. I loaded mine up. The only difference in the two loads was the primer. And his shot like buckshot, and mine shot nice and tight.
And the only difference was the primer.
I gave him a couple of my rounds. He fired them out of his gun. They shot accurately. I said, Vin, what did you do different from what I did? The only variation was the primer.
Same powder, same powder load.
Same bullet. Same bullet. Exactly.
Wow.
Same brass.
Because
I had bought 500 rounds of brass. I gave him 250. I took 250. So the only variable was he changed the primer. It zeroed it right in.
Wow. Now, we would probably make a lot of enemies, but what was the difference in the primer? I mean, was it the fact that the primer's bad? It was a bad...
No.
Bad manufacturer? Or just whatever they're using in the primer?
It's like gasoline for your car. Your car might run beautifully on Sunoco, where I go to Shell, my car, we both have,
same cars.
Same cars, made the same time.
And it just is just that different. Yeah. Wow. Because I know it really makes a big difference, too. Now, I use a relatively cheap primer. I use a Chedite primer. And I've got guys who are shooting there, who I shoot with on squads, who have been shooting forever. I've only been shooting trap for less than 2 years. And a lot of these guys are shooting handicap, and they're trying to tell me, you need to go to from 7/8 of an ounce, you got to get a faster shell, it's got to be more than 1,200 feet per second, blah, 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 for handicap. I don't find any damn difference between shooting handicap with 7/8. I'm shooting handicap 7/8 loads, breaking the same number of, you know, same number of targets that I would at 16 yards. And they're trying to tell me that they're all doing things differently. And I just find it just BS. You know, everybody got a story. And everybody, you know, so we could probably sit in a bar, you know, and have this discussion for days, you know, over a number of beers. About what is the proper load for this and what is the proper load for that. But what in your experiences, do you have your favorites? You have your favorites of powders? And for me, I use 700X and as a powder, 7/8 load, and I use a Chet Eye primer. And that's my recipe, and I stick with it, and I don't change it at all.
Well, I load a lot for the M1 Garand, and the weakest point, and as good as that rifle is, its weakest point is the operating rod, because it's so long and it's crooked to start with. So, if you ever took one apart and you see and said this part is something wrong with it, he says no, that's the way it was made. And if you have to use like 4895 or 4064, I think
3031. You ever use Winchester 748?
No, I never used any of the ball powders. But a lot of people make the mistake, and they use a hunting cartridge, which has a powder of a slower burning rate, and it puts too much pressure at the gas port. You wind up bending the operating rod more, and then you can mess the rifle up.
And this is something that you have to really stick to those numbers in those books.
Absolutely.
Yes.
All right, we're coming right back.
I want to tell you about my friend Katie. Katie is a nurse, and she was attacked on her way home from work. She was totally taken by surprise. And although Katie is only 5 feet tall and 106 pounds, she was easily able to drop her 6'4", 250-pound attacker to his knees and get away unharmed. Katie wasn't just lucky that day. She was prepared. In her pocketbook, a harmless-looking lipstick, which really contained a powerful man-stopping aerosol propellant. It's not like it was in our grandmother's day. Today, just going to and from work or to the mall can have tragic consequences. The FBI says a violent crime is committed every 15 seconds in the United States. And a forcible rape happens every 5 minutes. And chances are, when something happens, no one will be around to help. It looks just like a lipstick, so no one will suspect a thing, which is important since experts say getting the jump on your attacker is all about the element of surprise. Inside this innocent-looking lipstick is the same powerful stuff used by police and the military to disarm even the most powerful armed aggressor. In fact, National Park Rangers use the very same formula that's inside this little lipstick to stop 2,000-pound vicious grizzly bears dead in their tracks. It's like carrying a personal bodyguard with you, in your purse or your pocket. Darkness brings danger. Muggers and rapists use darkness to their advantage. We all know what it's like to be walking at night and hear footsteps coming at us from behind. Who's there? If it's somebody bad, will you be protected? Your life may depend on it. My friend Katie's close call needs to be a wake-up call for all of us, myself included. Pick up a lipstick bodyguard and keep it with you always.
Crank it on, crank it up, let's go, crank it up, it's Gun for Hire Radio.
And this segment's being brought to you by Lipstick Bodyguard, lipstickbodyguard.com, available also at the Woodland Park Range, Gun for Hire Woodland Park Range, and at the Philly Firearms Academy in Philadelphia. Our friends at Lipstick Bodyguard are once again running their holiday promotion, buy one or buy a thousand, the same low, low shipping price is there, and they pay the hazmat fees. If there's a woman or women on your gift list this holiday season, remember their safety. Crime against women is skyrocketing in the U.S. Even though general crime is going down, crime against women is going up. Protect the ones you love. Lipstick Bodyguard is the best thing. Make sure Lipstick Bodyguard is there to protect her when you can't be. They were totally sold out for the holidays last year, so make sure you get your order in now. Well, I hope you guys are having as much fun as I am. I mean, this is like really very, very educational for me. All right, so the pressures are very, very important when you're reloading.
Yes.
All right, so take me through some of the basics. What are some of the symptoms, let's just say, of high pressure?
Well, one of the first signs is you start to see the primers flatten out. Then it can be hard ejecting the round, and sometimes it'll rip the rim off of a rimless, and you're stuck with a round in the chamber if your pressure gets too high. The brass is made to, once the round is fired, the brass expands, but it bounces back slightly so that it can be ejected. But if you get too much pressure in there, the thing swells up and you're stuck.
Wow. So you now need some sort of a rod, like a dowel or something to pull
it. To knock it out. And if you get head separation, where just the head comes out, they make a tool that fits in to grab the rest of it and then yank it out.
Wow. But now, how do you avoid this? So do you stay within the tolerance? I know a lot of guys are just going to say, well, you know, if a little bit is good, a lot is better.
Oh, no. You have to stick with the book, and you work up to the book. You start out with the minimum load, you work up to your maximum load very slowly. And all the time that you're working up to the maximum load, you're looking for signs of pressure. You're looking for signs of the case lengthening, primer's blown out at a catastrophic end, but primer's becoming meshed, like Bobby had said. The primer's starting to flow back into the firing pin channel or firing pin hole. All the signs, the base of the case, you're looking around the base of the case for higher signs of pressure. Case is starting to split, it's starting to crack.
Is this something you're doing at every round you shoot, or are you shooting, say, you're going out and shooting 20 or 30 rounds, and then you're coming home now and checking each case, or as you're working this up, do you check every round?
Absolutely, I do.
Yeah, if you're trying something new, it's very important to check it right then and there.
Okay.
So I mean, if you have a problem with this one, don't fire the next one.
You don't want to go any further.
You don't go any further.
I mean, I was at the range one day, and they come over and they shut everything down, and there was somebody on a handgun range, and he had his daughter with him, and he was shooting a 44 mag. Well, he fired one, and apparently, either the primer was bad or somebody forgot to put powder in or whatever the heck happened. Well, sometimes if you light load these things, the powder lays on the bottom of the case and it doesn't and have a flashover. And the bullet got lodged in a barrel, and then he just routinely pulled the trigger a second time. Well, he didn't get hurt, but his daughter did.
Wow. So a lot of times, now was that with factory ammo or was that
something?
I don't know.
You know, did he get reloads? Did he have factory? I doubt if it was factory.
Yeah, because factory tends to be pretty good. I mean, you guys have heard of squib loads with factory ammo, haven't you?
Absolutely, ammunition that might have become contaminated.
Yeah.
After the storm we had a couple of years ago, when everything was flooded out, there was ammunition around that people had in their basement or their houses that got damp, and dampness is
a killer.
Yeah. Now, all right, let's get to that same point. Where do you have your reloading benches set up? Now, I've got mine in my garage because I don't have a basement. And I've got mine in my garage, and I live, you know, close to a big body of water that they call the Atlantic Ocean. So we always have a high humidity. I try not to. I keep my powder and I keep my primers in sealed boxes, you know, even primers. And for whatever reason, I'm keeping my primers far away. I think we had this discussion the other day, Bob, right? I keep them far away from my powder. And I don't know why, but just to me, it just seemed more, it seems safer to keep something that explodes away from something that burns really, really well.
Absolutely.
So I preach,
keep the powder and the primer separate.
Separate. How far separate?
Separate containers. I would keep them in the same, the Bureau of Mining in the state of New Jersey regulates how powder is stored. And a gun shop that I had used to work in, when they first started selling powder, they asked what type of insulated container did you want to keep the powder in. And the gentleman from the Bureau of Mining recommended an old refrigerator. Take the motor out so nobody plugs it in, nothing happens to it. But basically, we kept the powder in an old refrigerator. It was an insulated container. And it had worked well because they suffered a tragic fire. And the container did exactly what it was supposed to. It expanded to the point where it would expand. And it allowed the powder to burn off rather than explode.
Okay.
Whereas if you had kept it in something that was tightly sealed.
Like a steel case of some sort.
It could have caused the powder to explode. Whereas in this refrigerator, it just expanded and burned off like a firecracker that you would have broken in half when you were a kid.
Set on fire and just get a lot of sparks.
Absolutely.
Okay. Now, humidity, maximum, minimum humidities of a room that you're doing reloading in is?
I try to load in very low humidity. I can worry about powder absorbing moisture, and that'll actually change its burning rate.
Really? Okay.
But it's ironic when you think about it. I saw a show one time about the powder manufacturer up in North Jersey. I can't remember. Was it DuPont?
Hercules. Used to be up.
How they stored powder. The original lot of bullseye powder was in a glass jar. Now, the glass jar was approximately 18 inches or 14 inches tall, and it was probably a big around as 12 inches or 14 inches around, but it was stored underwater. It was loose granules of powder stored within the water, and when they took powder to test for burning rate, they would take the powder out of the water, dry it for X amount of period of time, and then test for burning rate. And once it's removed from the water, it's volatile again. But that's how they tested it. I watched it, and I was amazed to see that this is how they stored it.
Wow.
Underwater.
That's pretty cool when you think about it.
Yeah.
Now, if you were to have a situation like I have, where I have a garage, which is obviously always going to be damp. I mean, it's attached to the house, but it doesn't really matter. It's not climate controlled. It's insulated, but it's not climate controlled. What would you suggest? What would be a practice that you would do? Would you keep the powder in the reloader, or would you empty the reloader every time?
I get the stuff out of there as fast as I can.
Okay.
I get it right back in the original container, which is very important. Because,
absolutely important.
With rifles, and even handguns, there's so many types of powder and so many different burning rates, and in your reloading manual, they will list them from fastest burning rate to slowest. Up to the slowest, and that's where you can make a mistake and really have a problem.
Catastrophic. Again, you mix powders, and I thought I put this powder in there, but you put another powder in there, and it's got a faster burning rate, and you throw too many grains in the cartridge, you just blow your gun up.
Yeah. Now, how critical is this with shotgun reloading?
Just as critical. Sure.
Yeah. So... a lot of times now, you guys are weighing for rifle and pistol cartridges. You're weighing each dose that you put in, for lack of a better word. On the what do you call charge? Right,
it would be charge. Yeah.
Okay,
especially for a rifle.
Rifle powder is most of them are they're stick and is ball, and some of the stick powders can look like pencil lead.
Okay,
and they can be pretty coarse and. If they're going through the powder measure and they all stand up straight, you're going to get a heavy load. If they bridge, you know, get all tangled together, you come up with a light load. So it's very important to weigh each load Now, consistency.
One of the things that I find is an inconsistency, say with a mech loader, and I'm guessing now with shotgun, it's not as super critical because you're not weighing every single load. You're using a for lack of a better word, a collet, right? It's got
a disc with a hole in it.
A disc with a hole in it, where it's just dropping stuff into it, and it's kind of measuring it out, almost like it would be like you would take a scoop of flour and tamp it down and wipe it off to put into a recipe. But I do, before I start, I dispense two or three loads and I check them on a scale. Okay. And honestly, they're all over the place. And the 700X that I use is a pistol powder.
Yeah.
So, is that critical also? I mean, I'm sure you sticking this in brass, that's got to be even more critical as far as pressure is concerned. But do you have the same problem with it? These things look like a little disc. Do you have the same problems with that, stacking up differently? Or?
Well, absolutely. And then my progressive machines that I use for, I'll use a progressive machine for a lot of my handgun calibers. I have a Dillon machine. It tends to be very accurate, but with that, I try to make sure that I'm using the ball powder, and the ball powder tends to meter a lot more evenly, a lot more consistently, rather than a flake powder or a stick powder.
Okay.
It tends to fill that little void a lot more consistently.
Wow. All right, last minute tips. I mean, we're coming to the end of a couple minutes of the show. If somebody wanted to get involved in reloading, what is the first couple of steps they should do? What kind of quick and dirty tips could you give us? Where do they start?
Email me.
Email. All right. Charlie, email. Give your email.
Charlie@gunforhire.com.
Charlie@gunforhire.com. All right. And Bob, what would you say would be?
Safety first. It's very rewarding, but it can be very dangerous.
Dangerous both in the actual reloading process and in the shooting process.
Shooting.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. You got to be careful when you prime that you don't. I mean, I've had times a primer's flipped over and the primer got loaded backwards.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And if you're not aware of these things, you've got a problem.
Yeah, exactly right. Now, any other tips for safety on this? Where to store stuff?
Oh, beautiful. Powder in an insulated container, yeah. Primer separate from your powder, not in a damp environment.
Everything I'm doing wrong. All right, great. Well, guys, I really appreciate you guys coming in here. It has been wonderful, and I know we're going to do these things again. If you guys enjoyed this special segment, email us at sandy@gunforhireradio.com. Let me know. We'll produce more of these types of informative things. Charlie, it looks like you've got two metal cartridge reloading classes scheduled at Gun for Hire Academy. One on Sunday, January 31st, 2016 at 09:30 a.m. And another one on Sunday, February 28th, 2016, 09:30. It looks like a great Sunday morning. I know I'm going to try to be there to learn more of what I should be learning. If you're interested, why don't you come join us? You can sign up at gunforhire.com/courses. You going, Winston? All right, we're both going to be there. I hope to see you guys there. And don't forget, Toys for Tots. The box is right here in the range. Well, it's looking like you've wasted yet another perfectly good hour listening to Gun for Hire Radio. Gun for Hire Radio is a CounterThink Media production. The music used in this broadcast was managed by Cosmo Music, LLC in New York, New York, under license of Broadcast Music Incorporated. I'm Sandy Barani. On behalf of my missing co-host, Master Trainer Anthony Calandro, Charlie Padula, my cousin Bob, and the rest of the crew here at Gun for Hire Radio, we do thank you so much for listening. Remember, guys, each one, reach one. Get someone to subscribe to the show by using iTunes. And remember, this is your show, so we want to make it relevant for you. So please send in your ideas and suggestions for new shows in the future to sandy@gunforhireradio.com. See you next week. From sea to the shine.